Nathaniel once, but I knew that Edward would never do anything to endanger my domestic happiness, just like I would never do anything to endanger his. We'd both worked too hard to find people to love to screw it up now.
We're not.
He seems to talk to you more than any of his friends here.
He doesn't talk to me more, but he talks to me about the things he can't discuss with his friends from high school. I already knew the deep, dark secrets that even his mother doesn't know. You've put Peter in a position where he can't talk to his mother, his sister, his therapist, or his best friends there in New Mexico because it would be betraying your secrets. It's like he knows his stepdad is Batman, but he has to pretend he only knows Bruce Wayne. He can't talk about it with anyone.
He can talk to me about it,
Edward said.
You can't talk to Bruce Wayne about Batman if you know they're the same person.
I know where all the bodies are buried, I said. He could talk to me without telling me anything I don't already know.
You're a woman, a beautiful woman who is tough enough to go out hunting monsters with Batman. You're also Edward's best friend. How can Peter talk to you without wondering if you'll tell Edward?
Point made, I said.
Peter needed someone to talk to who already knew your secret identity. Trust me, if he'd had someone else, he'd have talked to them.
Why did you say it like that? I asked.
He wouldn't have confided in one of your boyfriends if he'd had anyone else.
What does you being my boyfriend have to do with it?
We talked about this, Anita,
Edward said. I know, I know. I rescued him and he's bonded to me like a baby duck. Nathaniel looked angry then, his beast's energy trickling out.
Don't do that, Anita. Don't make less of it than it is.
I don't know what you mean.
I hope you don't mean that because it's one of Peter's most important truths.
I shook my head. I don't know what you mean about his truth.
Fine. Here's the truth. You're right. He did fixate on you, but how could he not? He was kidnapped and they tortured him sexually. It was scary and horrible, but it was his first sexual experience, and then Anita shows up and saves him. Then you're with him when he killed the woman who had fucked with him. It was you who grabbed him off her body and shoved him up against a wall and told him that she was dead, that he had killed her, and that was as good as revenge got.
I know Anita didn't tell you all that.
Edward said, and his voice wasn't neutral or angry now.
Peter needed someone he could tell the whole truth to, and you've set him up so he can't tell anyone else.
He hasn't even told me all the details, and I already know them,
Edward said.
He hinted, and I told him about my background. Once he knew that I'd been abused and raped too, he was pretty sure I wouldn't judge him for what happened to him. It's hard for men to admit they were victims. I invited him up to our men's group here, but he's not ready to talk in group yet.
You have a group?
Edward asked.
There are more men with stories like Peter's in mind than you think.
It's not that. I'm sorry, Nathaniel. I didn't know that you were helping Peter. Thank you for being there for him when I couldn't be.
The anger just leaked away from Nathaniel. He looked surprised.
You're welcome. He's a decent person, confused, a little broken, but strong and trying to figure out if he's Robin to your Batman or something else.
Did he talk to you about some of his girlfriends?
Yes.
And?
And Peter asked my advice on a few things. He wanted to know that he wasn't a freak for enjoying what he enjoyed.
What did you tell him?
Edward asked.
That he's not a freak. He just has to make sure that it's all safe, sane, and consensual. He and I have talked a lot about consent.
I tried to talk to him about sex,
Edward said.
I know, but he couldn't talk to you about some of it. You're his dad, and you're more vanilla than he is.
Somehow vanilla was not a word I would have used for Edward ever. But then he and I didn't discuss his sex life. I just gave him the benefit of the doubt that he wasn't pure vanilla.
I don't understand some of the things that Peter wants.
He knows that. And he knows you tried to understand, but his kinks are not your kinks. And you sent him to a therapist who treated his interest in bondage and submission as a part of his brokenness.
His therapist feels that Peter is acting out his own abuse and anger from it in the bondage and rough sex.
Some, but whether it's from the abuse or was inside him waiting to be part of his sexuality doesn't really matter.
Of course it matters.
No, Edward, it really doesn't. What matters is that Peter doesn't feel like a freak or a monster, but understands that his sexuality is okay. I stressed that he has to negotiate any scene play so that his partner knows exactly what's going to happen and agrees to it all. I also told him that just because he fantasizes about something doesn't mean he'll enjoy it in reality, and that some fantasies must always remain as just that, fantasies.
Has he told you his fantasies?
Some.
I won't ask you to tell me.
Good, because I wouldn't betray his trust like that.
Can I ask you something with you promising not to tell Peter?
Depending on what it is. I can't promise blindly.
I guess that's fair. I told Anita that I was worried Peter was going to be an abuser because of what happened to him.
He could be, but he doesn't want to be. And sometimes when things like this happen to you, just deciding not to become the monster is enough to avoid it.
He's a predator like I'm a predator, and that's not just from what happened to him at 14,
Edward said.
No, it's not,
Nathaniel said.
I told Anita that I was afraid Peter would take it that extra step and be more of a predator than I am. Do you understand?
You're worried that the fact that he likes it rough, even violent, in the bedroom, means he's going to turn into a serial killer.
I told you I didn't think that was true of Peter when you asked me, Edward,
I said. But he hasn't talked in detail to you like he has to Nathaniel.
You don't just become a serial killer, Edward, Nathaniel said. Not without long-term and systematic abuse, which is not what happened to Peter.
You can be born one,
Edward said. Edward, I said, Nathaniel's right. You don't just become a serial killer without more damage than Peter has had in his life. Nathaniel said,
Was Peter a bedwetter when he was younger?
No.
Does he have a history of starting fires?
No.
Torturing animals?
No.
And that last no sounded more relaxed than the first two.
Peter is missing the serial killer trifecta, so he's not a born serial anything. He saw a werewolf kill his father in front of him when he was 8, and he picked up the gun his father dropped and killed the beast, saving his mother and baby sister. That's traumatic, but it was also brave and heroic. Maybe it made him more prone to violence in other parts of his life, or maybe the violence was always in there. Maybe that's what helped him be able to pick the gun up and use it to kill the monster that killed his father. Being good at violence isn't always a negative. You should know that better than most people.
You're right, I should. But it's always different when it's your kid.
I hope to find out how different someday,
he said, then turned to give me a look that was far too serious.
Don't look at me. I'm not planning on breeding, thanks. Kids are great, Anita,
Edward said.
Don't you start.
I can't imagine you pregnant and doing our job, but I can't imagine you never wanting kids either.
I really thought you'd be on my side on this one, Edward.
I'm not on anyone's side. I just want my best friend happy, whatever that means for her.
Nathaniel smiled at me. I pointed a finger at him.
We are not having this talk again. Especially not while we're planning the big wedding to Jean-Claude and an only slightly smaller ceremony with you and Micah. I'm helping plan both of those, plus helping Donna with her and Edward's wedding, but I'm not complaining.
Bully for you, but I mean it, Nathaniel. The baby talk is shelved until we've survived all the nuptial bliss.
Fine. Babies are shelved until after all three of the weddings are over.
That is not what I said.
It sort of is,
Edward said.
Damn it, you are on his side.
I'm not. I mean, if you got pregnant, who would come play cops and robbers with me?
I rolled my eyes, which made Nathaniel smile, but it was lost on Edward.
Yeah, you'd lose me as a playmate.
You and I play the best games together.
No,
Nathaniel said.
Anita and I play the best games together.
And we're done, I said. The two of you are not comparing notes on anything like that.
Would we do that, Anita?
Edward said, his voice teasing.
I'm not finding out because this conversation is over.
Edward laughed. Nathaniel joined in, and after a minute of trying to pout at them both, I gave up and joined them. When the laughter stopped, Edward asked again for Damien to come to Ireland and help find the vampires that were plaguing Dublin. Nathaniel asked more questions then, because he'd want to give as much information to the vampire when he finally woke for the day.
He's your vampire servant. Just order him to come with you to Ireland,
Edward said.
You know I won't do that, Edward.
You complicate your life, Anita.
If I didn't complicate my life, none of the men I love would be in it, and that includes Nathaniel.
Edward couldn't argue with that, so he didn't try.
If we have a vampire who knows the city, it could make all the difference, Anita.
I know, Edward. Nathaniel said,
What haven't you told us?
Anita has more details about the actual murders.
What about your mysterious friend Brian and where you met?
No.
What about the person behind the new project who isn't Van Cleef but is like Van Cleef? Who is he? How dangerous is he to Anita?
If I thought he was dangerous to her, I wouldn't ask her to come.
Nathaniel tried a few more questions. I knew better. Once Edward had decided the amount of information he would share, then he was done. We left it like that, because being besties with Edward meant I had to be all right with the fact that I might never know everything about his past. I could live with that, and so could Edward. I suspected that he had some secrets that if he shared them with me, we might not be able to live with them, because someone would find us and make sure we didn't. Maybe it would just be jail time in a government facility, but I was betting that the mysterious Van Cleef was more a final solution type of guy, and nothing says final like being dead. Chapter 20. I picked my phone up and looked at Nathaniel across the small table. I didn't know you'd been talking to Peter in that much detail.
Donna and Edward, Ted, suggested Peter call me for help planning the bachelor party. We talked about things for the party that helped him know I wasn't embarrassed by certain topics, and he started talking to me.
You never mentioned it to me.
Peter spoke to me in confidence.
I get that, but still it feels like I missed something important.
He smiled. You didn't miss anything you'd want to know.
I puzzled through that for a second and then shrugged. I don't understand what that means, Nathaniel.
It means that he confided in me and he talked to me about things that would embarrass you coming from Peter. You've known him since he was 13 or 14, so to you he's a little kid. What he needed help with was grown-up stuff that he couldn't have talked about with any woman, let alone you.
Okay, what does that mean? The smile faded around the edges and he shook his head.
I am not going to talk to you about what Peter and I discussed. It's private, and it would bother him a lot if I broke his confidence to you.
And what does that mean?
It means the topic is closed, because I am not going to let you ask questions until you figure out things from my answers. We're done talking about Peter.
So serious all of a sudden. He raised both eyebrows and looked at me very steadily. What? I asked. He pushed his chair back, stood, and offered me his hand.
Let's go find Sin and the rest and find out if Pierrette knows as much about Ireland as Damien does.
You really don't want him to go with me.
Damien feels he barely escaped She Who Made Him once. Sending him back where she could physically touch him again seems like a bad idea.
He didn't escape. She let him go because she was done with him. If he'd escaped, I wouldn't take him back there.
I still hope Pierrette can give you intel about Ireland so you can leave Damien at home.
He waggled his hand at me. After a moment's hesitation, I took his hand in mine. Yes, I did think about not taking it, but that would have been childish. I was trying to be better than that. We walked through the door together this time. The gym was still empty and seemed very quiet without all the hustle and bustle of other people. Edward may talk to Peter about what you said, I said.
No, he won't,
Nathaniel said. How do you know that he won't?
Because he's relieved that Peter has someone to talk to about this stuff.
If he tells Donna, she'll pester Peter about it.
If he tells her.
You think he won't?
I think Edward will do what he thinks is best for Peter.
And you think that doesn't include telling his mother that you're his confidant?
Don't you?
Nathaniel asked. I thought about it for a minute and then nodded. Donna wouldn't be able to leave it alone. It would bug her that her son is able to confide in you more than in her.
Even though the topics he's needed help with would have been wildly inappropriate for a mother-son talk?
Nathaniel asked. You've talked to Donna enough on the phone and via Skype while you've been helping with the wedding. What do you think? It was his turn to think, and he finally said,
You're right. She would have to poke at it.
So you're right. Edward won't mention it to her because he'd know better than we do that she wouldn't be able to leave it alone. We walked into the hallway outside the gym area, and it felt like a tunnel after the wide open spaces of the gym. I heard Sin's voice, though I couldn't pick out the actual words. A woman's voice answered him, But it wasn't until they came into sight that I could see it was Sin and Pierrette. Nikki and Magda were nowhere in sight. Pierrette was talking earnestly to him. He nodded as if encouraging her to go on. All the anger seemed to have seeped away from her. What the hell had Sin said to Pierrette to get her so eager to tell all? She saw us first and almost startled, standing taller as if she were coming to attention. "My queen," she said, and bowed. Nathaniel and I exchanged a look. If I hadn't known she would hear me, I'd have suggested it was pod people, because Pierrette's entire attitude had changed in just minutes. Sin could be charming, but he was a 20-year-old man. He hadn't had enough life experience to be this charming. Hell, Jean-Claude couldn't have pulled this off without using vampire mind powers on her. "Pierrette," I said, and inclined my head to her, though honestly I never knew what to do when someone referred to me as their queen. I let them use the title because that had been the Mother of All Darkness's title, and it was very much a case of the queen is dead, long live the queen. Sin glanced back at us with a smile. "Pierrette has been telling me all about her travels around the world with her master, Pierrot." "Are any of those adventures set in Ireland?" I asked.
"Yes, my queen," she said.
"Ireland was one of the places that Pierrette and Pierrot policed for the old vampire council," Sin said.
"Police arrest people. They save lives. Did you arrest people, Pierrette?"
"There was only one punishment for vampires who had overstepped themselves, my queen."
"And that was?" I asked.
"The same as it is now. Death."
I couldn't really argue with her reasoning. I was a U.S. Marshal, but really my job description hadn't changed. I was still a legal executioner with a badge. "Did you ever kill anyone in Ireland?" I asked.
"No. Milady took care of such things herself."
"Milady? I've never heard her called that before." We were up even with them now, so I got the full weight of her large brown eyes.
"Even we of the Harlequin, with the strengths of the Mother of All Darkness behind us, dared not speak her true names, for it called her attention to us. So we christened her Milady, for it was the name she forced her pets to call her."
"Pets? Do you mean her animals to call?" Sin asked.
She turned that delicate face with its large dark eyes up to his face.
"No, my prince. So she made some were-animals into pets. Most were vampires like the queen's servant, Damien."
"What do you mean Damien was her pet? I don't understand what the word means in this context."
"They were her sexual partners, but to call them lovers suggested an emotion that Milady did not seem to exhibit. She was as likely to torture them as share pleasure with them. They were at the mercy of her whims, and she was very whimsical."
"I thought whimsical meant fun and lighthearted," I said.
"Then I have misspoken, because Milady was not prone to fun, and if she had a heart in the sense that you mean, there was nothing light about it. She forced them to call her Milady, much as the way a slave in the bondage and submission community will call their dominant master, except that title is usually earned and freely given, and nothing was free of cost between Milady and her pets, or slaves."
"Calling someone master is a term of endearment and respect in the BDSM community," Nathaniel said.
"Then again I have misspoken, because it was a demand. A title like queen or king, with nothing endearing about it."
"Didn't it bother you to use the same name she forced her pets to use?" I asked.
"Somewhat, yes. But what else were we to call her?"
"Wicked bitch of Ireland's been working for me." Pierrette looked shocked for a moment, and then she laughed. But it was laughter you make when someone surprises or shocks you more than amuses you.
"If you have the misfortune to see her, my queen, please do not call her that to her face. I do not want to lose another dark queen in less than 2 years."
"What if I told you that Milady is allowing vampires that aren't hers to terrorize a city in Ireland?"
"I would say that it isn't true. She holds absolute sway over the vampires in Ireland, because they can only rise through her bite, her line. She is her own Sœur de Sang, fountain of blood, just as Jean-Claude has become, as Belmont and the dragon have been for centuries. Only our power has been great enough to overcome the reluctance of the land to give up its dead."
"What do you mean about the land?" I asked.
"The wild magic of the Fae is stronger in Ireland than anywhere else remaining in the world, Even if someone dies by vampire bite, with the 3 bites and the right amount of blood taken in the last feeding, most bodies do not rise in Ireland. They are simply dead and begin to rot. Only someone who was their own bloodline could have any hope of creating vampires in Ireland.
So a vampire that was a fountain of blood would be able to raise vampires there, but no one else? I asked.
Even then it wouldn't be a given. We have seen Milady try to create vampires and the bodies remain inert. She was enraged by her failures, but they were not infrequent. The land's magic is too alive for any kind of death magic to work well there.
Then why do the Irish not like necromancers?
True necromancers are so rare throughout history that I would not think they had a policy for or against, Pierrot said.
Another marshal has been trying to get permission for me to come to Ireland and help him on a case, but they didn't want to let a necromancer into their country.
That surprises me, my queen. They are one of the most welcoming countries in the world to all magics.
I shrugged. All I can tell you is that they didn't want to let me in at first.
He did say your reputation for violence was part of the reason, Nathaniel said.
I frowned at him. Okay, well, yeah.
I can see them protesting that, but not your magic, she said.
It's what I was told.
Maybe it's that you're a true necromancer, Sin said.
What do you mean?
You killed the mother of all darkness, Anita. That's like a step up from normal necromancy, Nathaniel said.
There is no normal necromancy, Pierrot said. There have only been a handful of necromancers worthy of the name in the last 1,000 years, and we killed them before they could grow into their full powers.
And yet everyone's afraid of us, I said.
They're afraid of people like your co-workers, who raise and control zombies. They have no idea what a true necromancer could do.
There were videos all over the internet showing the zombies in Boulder, Colorado last year, Sin said.
Pierrot nodded.
Some show Anita surrounded by her own army of zombies. Yes, that might give the Irish authorities pause.
I hadn't thought about it like that.
But wait, shouldn't the magic of the land keep me from raising zombies there?
It should, but there shouldn't be a case involving vampires there either, Pierrot said.
Why couldn't Milady have gone crazy and attacked people? Sin asked.
She is too controlled and far too old to risk everything for such indulgence.
What would cause new vampires to rise in one of the cities there?
Nothing, she said,
and seemed very certain. I need your word that you won't share anything I am about to tell you with anyone, Pierrot, I said.
I cannot keep any secrets from my master, for when he wakes he will know everything that I have experienced while he slept.
Okay, then I need your word and his that this goes no further.
You have my word, and my word is his, as is his to me.
I was a little puzzled by her sentence, but I accepted it. I have your word of honor?
You have it.
One of the good things about the older vampires was that their word of honor really was good, because they still believed it really was their honor at stake, and that meant something to them. I told her as little as possible, but enough to let her know there were new vampires rising in Dublin nearly every night.
That should not be possible, she said,
and she looked perplexed as if she was thinking very hard. But it is what appears to be happening.
If she did not create them, then that would be more true. But even vampires not of her making should be subject to her power.
Is she lying? Sin asked.
Pierrot glanced at him, and then down.
I do not know, but if she is not lying, then something has gone very wrong.
What could that be? I asked.
When you slew the mother of all darkness, there were vampires that went to sleep at dawn that never woke that night. She was their power source, and once that was gone, they could not rise from the dead again. I would have thought Milady as her own bloodline would have been safe from any diminishment of power, but it is one possibility.
We didn't have anyone that didn't rise here in St. Louis, I said.
You and Jean-Claude are here. It is your seat of power, and all the vampires blood-oathed to him would have gained in power from you eating the Dark Mother. But power comes from somewhere, Anita. You took it from the Mother of All Darkness and gave it to your vampires, your animal allies, but it cost others dearly to be disconnected from their power source.
Why didn't they just keep going with Jean-Claude and Anita as their power source?
Sin asked. I do not know, but I have never seen a master vampire that was their own bloodline slain without costing the lives of some of their vampires, even when a new master has taken over the territory. The move from one source of life to another is never as neat and clean as modern vampires believe.
Old master vamps still tell their little vampires that if the master dies, they won't wake up the next night. But I've proved that's not true.
For a simple master vampire, it is not. But masters of the city can take some of their lesser vamps with them to the grave, and a Sortre de Sang can take many of their creations down to death with them. When you slew the lover of death for well and good last year, many of his children died with him.
I didn't know that, I said.
Would you have cared if you had known?
Maybe. But we're not talking about vampires dying and not rising from their coffins. We're talking about more new little vampires rising, I said.
The magic of the land itself should prevent such a plague of vampires in Ireland.
According to the police, there are more attacks every night, I said. Pierrot frowned and looked at the floor again, which apparently was what she did when she was thinking hard.
Are there any attacks outside the city?
She asked at last. Not that's been mentioned to me.
If it's only happening in the city and not the countryside, then it could be that the wild fairy magic itself is beginning to wane. It's happened nearly everywhere else in the world, and it would start in the city if that was the reason. The countryside, without all of mankind's technology and metal, would retain its magic longer.
How would they check to see if that's what's happening? I asked.
Ask the little people. They're still there and they deal with the humans. Ask the fairy doctors. They'll know.
Literally, fairy doctors? I asked. She gave a small smile.
No, they are humans who either gain their magic through the gentlefolk or are beloved by the fae in some way. The Irish call them fairy doctors because in past times they would cure ill livestock or people like a doctor, but they did it through fairy magic, not medical science.
Are they still allowed to use magic to cure people?
Nathaniel asked. Pierrette didn't seem to hear him. I'd think modern medicine would have done away with them, I said.
They are not allowed to act as doctors, but they are still valued as a type of psychic ability, she said.
Can they cure things that modern medicine can't? Nathaniel asked.
Again, Pierrette ignored him. Nathaniel asked you a question, I said. She looked at me.
You are our queen and our conqueror. Sin is a young prince and is treated as such by our new king. But he,
and she pointed at Nathaniel,
is nothing to us. Not king, not prince, not Nimeraj, not Rex, not Ulfric, not a leader of any group. Why should I answer his questions?
He is my fiancé, I said.
No, Jean-Claude is your fiancé. Nathaniel is someone that you will do an unofficial ceremony with that even your own laws do not recognize as a legally binding contract.
The same is true of Micah and me.
He is a king in his own right, both of the Leopards and of the Coalition, she said.
I'm not a prince in my own right, Sin said. I'm only that because Jean-Claude says so.
And you are in the bed of the queen.
So is Nathaniel, he said.
Pierrette shook her head.
It is not the same.
She's putting a ring on his finger, not on mine.
She shook her head stubbornly.
You act as a true Motibet. He does not.
Nathaniel is part of my triumvirate of power with Damien. Why doesn't that give him more status?
Jean-Claude gains power through his triumvirate, but you seem to gain none through yours. He chose the most powerful necromancer since the Mother of All Darkness herself as his human servant, and the Ulfric of the local werewolf pack is his Motibet. Nathaniel is one of the weakest of the were-leopards in the local pard, and Damien was one of the weakest of Milady's vampires.
So you don't respect Damien either, Sin said.
I pity him for what I saw him endure over the centuries, but no, I do not respect him. The Harlequin do not respect weakness.
I'm in love with Nathaniel, and would marry him, Micah, and Jean-Claude legally if I could.
Which is more than she'd do with me if she could, Sin said.
He didn't sound bitter or angry, he was just stating fact.
None of the other men see you as their catamount, my prince. You cannot marry Anita because none of the other men see you romantically.
Nathaniel and I actively share Anita.
But you do not share each other, she said.
Sin glanced at the other man.
Help me out here, Nathaniel.
I don't think I can, Sin. Pierrette is right. I'm not a king or a prince.
Some of the guards called you and Micah both my princes, I said.
Not since Micah made the coalition a power to be reckoned with, and Sin became the young prince.
So unless someone is a leader, you discount them? I asked.
Not discount, but if they are not in charge of anything else, then they cannot be in charge of the Harlequin, she said.
She said it like it was just a fact of life, a given. Nikki is in charge of the local lions, but you don't respect him as much as Micah or Sin, I said.
Scaramouche should not have used his claws today, she said.
But in everyday dealings, you don't treat Nikki as well as you do me, Sin said.
She sighed.
I do not wish to insult anyone.
Just tell us, Pierrette, I said. She nodded, but it was more like a bow from the neck.
If my queen commands.
Yeah, I command.
Nikki could have fought his way to be Rex of your local pride, but he could not have maintained the leadership without your backing. Everyone knows that if they challenge him, the might of you and Jean-Claude will be with him. If he did not have the other two male lions to help him run the lions, even that might not be enough. He is a good warrior, but not a good leader, and he is your bride, which is less than an animal to call or even a human servant. No disrespect meant to you, my queen, but brides aren't meant to be kept this long. They are designed to please their groom and be sacrificed for his or her safety as needed.
No disrespect meant, but... Huh? You and your other two playmates that got beat up aren't usually this respectful even to me. What changed?
You showed that you noticed us and did not approve of our behavior.
I frowned at her. Magda said almost the same thing when I got her to stop picking fights with some of the other lionesses. That I'd noticed her efforts or something like that.
We need our queen or our king to rule us, Anita.
What does that mean exactly?
It means exactly what I said.
I was pretty sure that the phrasing meant more than I understood, but I wasn't sure how to ask the right question to get an explanation that would make sense to me. Nathaniel said,
Maybe they're like people who push until someone pushes back, because they need to know the rules, or maybe they need to have rules.
You mean like Nikki beat the shit out of them and suddenly Scaramouche is offering to do Jean-Claude, or let Jean-Claude do him?
Yes.
So if they can't have good treatment, they'll misbehave until they get bad treatment? Is that it? I asked.
I think so,
Nathaniel said. Pierrette was watching us talk as if she were memorizing the conversation, and maybe she was so she could repeat it back to her fellow Harlequin. Is that it, Pierrette? I asked. Is any attention better than no attention?
I do not understand the question.
Magda was picking fights with one of the local lionesses until I slept with her the first time. She literally said that now that I'd noticed her efforts, she would leave the other lionesses alone. Scaramouche is a pain in our asses until we have Nikki punch him out, and now he's willing to cooperate with us. Magda got positive attention and behaved better. Scaramouche and you get negative attention and you behave better, so it doesn't seem to matter what kind of attention you get as long as it's some attention from me. I guess Jean-Claude's attention would serve just as well, but do you understand the point we're trying to make now? She thought about it, staring at the floor while she did it again. She looked up before she said,
I believe so, and it may be accurate. I would want my master to hear your words before I answer for certain.
Fair enough, I said.
Sin said, What Nathaniel did just now is one of his purposes in Anita's life.
I do not understand, my prince. Pierrette said.
He helps her think better.
Ah, yes, I see. Then he may be more her moitié bête than we thought, but he is still weak, both as a leader and a warrior.
But he's very strong in my heart, I said, and reached out to hold Nathaniel's hand.
We have no doubt you love him, my queen, but love is not enough to set someone as king above us.
It's okay, Anita. Concentrate on Ireland. Nathaniel said.
It's not okay that they disrespect you.
No, but save lives first. The rest can wait.
Even you? He smiled.
Even me.
Okay.
Pierrette, do you think that Milady lost enough power when Mommy Darkness died that she can't stop a new vampire from populating Dublin with new vamps? Is that really possible?
Many things are possible, my queen, but likely no.
Why would the fairy magic be diminishing then?
I do not know. I have no dealings with the gentlefolk. They do not like vampires and those who associate with them. They tolerated Milady because she had the power to force them to deal with her. Perhaps the fae magic was more important to her own powers than we understand, and it is the failure of that magic which is weakening Milady.
So it's not that Milady lost power when Mommy Darkest died, but the fairy magic fading that's hurting her power levels? Again, Pierrette stared at the floor while she thought about what I'd said.
That could be the case.
So whoever is in the city doing all this is a new player in the country?
A new vampire, yes,
she said.
Why would fairy magic fading cause Milady's power to fade? Sin asked.
Because it is a part of her, as is the very soil of Ireland itself.
Is that where the myth about needing to lie in their native soil comes from?
Some very weak vampires do need to lie in their original soil, or they will die and never awaken again.
It's certainly not true for any of you. You've traveled the globe, I said.
We had the Mother of All Darkness to power us on our travels. We knew she would sustain us.
Are you saying that without her power to back you, if you travel to another country, you won't wake again?
My master has not been on his native soil for centuries, and he sustains me.
If you didn't die with him, what would happen to you? Sin asked.
No one knows, for when one half dies, the other follows.
You guys always die with your masters? I asked.
Yes, but then most Moetibet will die with their masters, for it is their power that sustains us.
I squeezed Nathaniel's hand and touched Sin's arm. He smiled down at me and put an arm across my shoulders.
It's okay, Anita.
You didn't ask to be my animal to call.
I was pretty much begging for it,
Nathaniel said, smiling. You wanted anything that got you closer to me, I said, bumping my head gently against his shoulder.
I still do,
he said, and kissed me ever so gently. Pierrette tried to keep her face blank, but couldn't quite manage it. You don't approve? I asked.
It is not for me to approve or disapprove.
Sin put his other arm around both me and Nathaniel so that we were in a group hug. Touching both of them like that made my skin run warm with power. The rush of it made me close my eyes for a moment. It felt so good.
And that is why we do not tell you how to run your power, my queen. For just that extra touch has made the three of you burn brighter.
We all love each other, Sin said.
I looked up at him. He smiled down at my upturned face.
Don't look so surprised, Anita. That talk we had recently about how I could be content with only having part of your life... Well, one of the reasons it works is Nathaniel and Nikki and Micah. They are my brothers.
Most brothers don't share their girlfriends, I said.
Brother husbands, then. But you're just trying to dissect it like you always do. Just accept the fact that we love each other, that the three of us love each other. Our own magic tells you it's true.
He tightened his hug around us, and Nathaniel hugged him back, and I was held between the two of them. It felt warm and safe and good. I finally let myself lean my head against Sin's chest, and something hard and tight inside me let go as he and Nathaniel held me. The power was gentler than the ardure, but it still spilled over us, around us.
Is this what love feels like?
Pierrette asked in a soft voice. I looked up to see her touching the air in front of her. I think she was caressing the power that was rolling around us. I concentrated for a moment and felt her fingertips almost as if the power she was touching were a part of my skin.
Yes, Sin said. That's what love feels like.
It is warm and safe, but it feels like power, too.
She looked startled and drew her hand back.
Your power doesn't just feed on lust, it feeds on love.
I nodded.
Yeah. Some of us think you spend too much time with the emotions of your lovers, when all you need is the sex. But we did not understand that you feed on love and not just lust. Love strengthens you, literally.
I think love strengthens everyone, literally, I said.
Oh no, my queen. Love can be a terrible weakness.
Or a great strength, I said. Pierrette did her floor-gazing routine again as she thought.
Perhaps it is both.
Sin leaned over closer to me.
There is nothing stronger than love.
He whispered it as he leaned further, and I came up on tiptoe to meet his lips with mine. Nathaniel closed the small space that my going up on tiptoe had made in our hug, so that he was holding us even tighter while we kissed. He kissed my shoulder while Sin kissed my lips. It reminded me of all the times they'd shared me between them, and the memory was enough to make me shiver between them. Sin drew back from the kiss enough to say,
"Keep doing that, and I'll forget everything but you."
Nathaniel bit gently on my shoulder, which made me not just shiver but writhe a little bit.
"No fair," I said.
"Very fair," Nathaniel said.
"Unless we can actually have sex, no fair," Sin said.
I don't know what we would have said next, because energy rolled off Pierrette like the first rush of cold air in front of a rainstorm. We all turned and looked at her. Her eyes weren't brown anymore. They were a rich gray like rain clouds just before the sky opens up and tries to drown the world. Nathaniel tensed beside me, and I felt Damien wake on the bed in our room. His moment of disoriented panic was enough to let me know that he didn't remember last night either. I shut down the link between us enough not to get distracted by his emotions because we had other problems right in front of us.
"Well, what a pretty sight to wake up to,"
Pierrette's mouth said the words, but the intonation and pitch were not hers. All the rest of the vampires were awake for the night. "Pierrot," I said. The gray eyes fluttered almost like Pierrette would faint, though her body stayed rock steady.
"My queen, I see that much has happened while I slept."
"It's been a busy day," I said.
"So Pierrette has told me."
It wasn't just the voice. Even her facial expressions were no longer hers. It was like she'd become some living ventriloquist's dummy. I'd seen vampires do similar things before, but it never ceased to creep me out. The men had opened up our hug enough so we could move if we had to, which meant they saw this new mix of personalities as more of a threat than Pierrette on her own. Good that we all agreed.
"Jean-Claude has treated us as if we were like you, some sort of metaphysical policeman. He has chosen to isolate and worry only for his adopted country, and allow the rest of the world to go to hell."
The European vampires said they'd go to war against us if we tried to rule all the vampires, as the old vampire council had done. But you know that. You and Pierrette helped bring their messages to us.
"We did, my queen. But I never dreamed Jean-Claude would agree to their blackmail. He had us, the Harlequin, at his beck and call. At his command, we would have chosen targets and rid him of his enemies. He could have ruled the world as king of all vampires. It is what we had done for the old council for centuries."
"Jean-Claude didn't want his reign to begin with more bloodshed," I said.
"But there has been bloodshed, Anita. So many vampires killed across the world in a fight to rule their small piece of it. We would have killed with precision, like a surgeon cuts away diseased flesh to make the body whole again. Instead, he has let the disease spread across the world."
"What disease?" Sin asked.
"Freedom, my prince. Vampires cannot be allowed this much freedom unless he wishes anarchy to rule the rest of the world while he sits comfortably in America."
If you had foreseen what is happening in Ireland, you'd have used that as a bargaining point when we were discussing how to handle the new council setup, I said.
"I did not see this particular problem, because I thought if anyone could keep her kingdom safe, it would have been Milady. That she has lost control and power is most worrisome."
"Because she was a fountain of blood, her own bloodline," I said.
"Exactement, mon rein."
He pronounced the last word like the bird, wren, though I knew it didn't sound exactly... Oh, I mean exactement the same. I didn't even have to borrow Jean-Claude's memories to know that Pierrot had said, "Exactly, my queen." Do you really think the Wicked Bitch of Ireland has been weakened by Marmee Noir's death?
I can think of no other explanation, he said, though it was still Pierrette's body doing the talking.
There are always other explanations, I said.
But this is the most likely.
Pierrette thought that fey magic finally fading in Ireland might do it. He shook her head.
No, my queen. It is the death of our creator that has spread chaos over Ireland.
You don't know that for certain.
If you are going to Ireland, you will need us.
We'll see.
No one knows the country and the vampires in it better than we do.
I can think of someone who knows the vampires better than either of you. Pierrette's delicate face made an expression I'd only seen on Pierrot's face before. He was disgusted at the thought.
You cannot compare the aid you would gain from Damien to what we could do for you.
He is my vampire servant and the third of my triumvirate of power. That makes him pretty helpful.
Pierrette has already made our views clear on the uselessness of your triumvirate. Our weapon skills alone would be of more help than either Damien or Nathaniel.
I don't know about that, Nathaniel said,
but his voice didn't sound right. And when I turned to look at him, his eyes weren't lavender anymore. They were green.
Chapter 21 Nathaniel's eyes had changed back to lavender by the time we got to our bedroom, and the freshly showered, though very pissed off, vampire. He was pacing the room, but it was a little hard for Nathaniel and me to take the anger seriously, since he was wearing nothing but a towel wrapped around his waist. He'd forget and try to gesture angrily with both hands, the towel would start to slip, and he'd have to grab it to save his modesty, and whatever outrage he'd managed to work up was lost on both of us. I finally said out loud, "If you really want to make your point, you need more clothes." He stopped pacing and turned to face us, one hand clutching the side of the towel.
"Are you saying you haven't been paying attention to anything I said because I'm wearing a towel?"
"No. I'm saying I can't concentrate on what you're saying because you're mostly naked and wearing a towel that keeps slipping every few sentences."
"That's great. Just great. I finally speak up for myself and you ignore me."
He was almost yelling. "We're not ignoring you, Damien. If anything, we're paying too much attention to you."
"To my body, but not what I'm saying."
"Isn't that what you wanted?" Nathaniel asked.
"What? To have two more people ignore what I want and what I need so they can get what they need instead?"
He stalked to the foot of the bed, where Nathaniel was sitting and I was standing.
"You said that what you wanted was to be desired, wanted, the way that Anita and I desire each other and Micah."
Damien frowned as if he were trying to think and couldn't.
"I don't remember that. I don't remember much."
He pointed at me very dramatically.
"You rolled me. You mind-fucked me."
This isn't my doing. When I first woke up and couldn't remember anything, I thought you'd rolled me. That stopped him. He looked at me, frowning, trying to remember through the haze of his damaged memory. I hadn't tried yet because I'd been mind-fucked before. I knew that if the memories came back, they'd come back slowly on their own, or not at all. Usually something would remind you of what had happened, and you'd get a brief glimpse of what had happened, but it would come in its own time. You could do things to force it, but they all came with a price.
"I thought Jean-Claude couldn't mind-roll you, because you were his human servant and a necromancer."
"I didn't say it was Jean-Claude. I said I thought it was you when I first woke up and couldn't remember anything."
"But I can't remember anything either, so it wasn't me."
"No, it wasn't you."
"And it wasn't you," he said.
"Nope."
"And it wasn't Jean-Claude," he said.
"Nope." He frowned harder, rubbing one hand against his temple while the other kept clutching at his misbehaving towel.
"Then what happened to us?"
"I'm sitting right here, and you've totally ignored me,"
Nathaniel said. Damien shook his head.
"I'm not ignoring you."
"You haven't even asked me if I remember anything?"
"If Anita and I don't remember anything, then you won't remember either."
"Really?"
Nathaniel was finally getting angry, and I guess I couldn't blame him. In a way, I'd done the same thing, assumed that it couldn't be him. that he couldn't have taken control of the power we raised and used it against us. I realized, watching Damien make the same mistake, that we both discounted Nathaniel. I was in love with him, but I didn't see him as a threat. He was 5'9", a man in really good shape and a were-leopard. He could have been a physical threat if he'd wanted to be, but none of us saw him that way. He was the only man in my life who had picked up a dropped gun and used it to kill someone to save me. Until Nikki had started going monster hunting with me, Nathaniel had been the only man in my life who had killed to save me. Yet I still hadn't thought he'd been the one who took charge between the three of us. Shame on me.
What if I told you I do remember?
Nathaniel asked, and his voice held a hint of warmth to it that prickled along my skin, and not in a good foreplay kind of way. It was more like a mix of standing too close to an open oven and a dance of electricity down the side of my body nearest him. His beast was beginning to answer to his anger. I took a small step away from him so my beasts didn't start rising to his.
What do you remember?
Damien asked.
All of it.
Damien shook his head.
I don't believe that.
Why not?
Nathaniel stood up then, and I was suddenly very aware that he was only 3 inches shorter than the vampire. It didn't seem like nearly the size difference it usually did.
What's wrong with you?
Damien asked.
Maybe I'm tired of being discounted in this relationship.
What relationship? I don't even have a relationship with Anita.
And if you don't have a relationship with the girl, then you can't have a relationship with the guy? Is that it?
He had moved forward so that he was invading Damien's personal space. Damien backed up from him. I wasn't even sure he realized he'd done it.
What are you talking about, Nathaniel?
This. I'm talking about this.
And he took his shirt off in one smooth motion, baring all that muscular and well-toned chest. It made Damien take another step back. He looked startled this time and knew he'd given ground, but he didn't care and gave more as Nathaniel turned his back on him and swept his braid to one side. Damien didn't seem to understand at first, and neither did I. But then I saw the vampire's face grow pale, which is a trick since his skin was paper white, pale even for a vampire.
What? What is that?
You know what it is,
Nathaniel said, and his voice still held anger. He was glaring at me as if I were included in his anger with Damien. Damien stopped backing up and took a step toward the other man. He took another step forward and put his hand out toward Nathaniel's bare back. His hand was shaking as he reached out, but didn't quite touch, as if he couldn't make himself close those last 3 inches. It was too much. I had to know what was spooking him so badly. I started walking to them with Nathaniel glaring at me. His eyes had gone from their usual lavender past lilac to almost a grape purple. I wasn't sure I'd ever seen his eyes that dark with anger. He bent forward so I could see better, rolling his right shoulder down and a little more out of reach of Damien's hand, but the vampire wasn't trying to finish the gesture. He seemed frozen in mid-motion. What the hell was it? I put a hand on Nathaniel's arm to steady myself as I went up on tiptoe to look at his back. And there it was, a neat vampire bite, not on his neck, but on his back. One higher up near the shoulder and the other lower down nearer the shoulder blade. There was no reason to bite there for blood. It wasn't a good place to feed. There were only 2 reasons to bite there, for torture or for pleasure. I was pretty sure which Nathaniel had thought it was at the time. He was a happy little pain slut when sex was involved.
Are you saying I did that?
Damien asked.
And this.
Nathaniel showed the bite on the other side of his neck. I've got one of those too, I said. Damien looked from one to the other of us.
I asked for more blood so we could keep having sex. Didn't I? Didn't I?
Yes,
Nathaniel said, standing upright. His anger was beginning to fade. He always had a hard time holding on to a fight. I guess that helped balance out my own temper.
But the bites on your back, that wasn't so I could feed.
I asked you to bite me,
Nathaniel said, turning around so he could see the other man's face. Damien was frowning hard. He
He was lucky he was eternally youthful, or he'd have ended up with permanent creases between his eyes if he kept doing that often.
When? I mean, what were we doing that I'd bite you there?
Do you remember biting me here?
He turned his leg to one side to expose the inside of his thigh. He moved the leg of his workout shorts to show the bite on his thigh.
I've got one of those too, I said, and this time I moved the legs of my shorts until I found the bite very high up on my thigh. If we'd worked out for real today, I'd have felt that.
How many times did we do it?
Damien asked. I answered, 4.
One per bite, he said, except not the back.
You still don't remember, do you?
Nathaniel asked, and he looked sad.
I remember you kissing me.
You could see Damien struggling to remember, chasing the memory, but sometimes the harder you chase, the faster it runs away.
That's right. We kissed.
Damien looked at me.
Do you remember everything?
I shook my head. He frowned and looked at Nathaniel.
Do you remember?
More than Anita remembers.
Damien rubbed his forehead.
Why can't I remember?
Nathaniel sighed and started to say something, but I interrupted. We raised more power between the three of us than we ever had before.
So why don't I remember? Why don't you? Why does Nathaniel remember more?
Jean-Claude thinks it's because you and I are conflicted about the three of us, and Nathaniel isn't conflicted.
So because Nathaniel is all right with anything the three of us do, he remembers what we've done?
Something like that, I said. Nathaniel looked at me, his face soft. He held his hand out to me and I took it. We'd raised the most power ever between us, and we're closer to being a real triumvirate of power than ever before, and it wasn't my doing or Damien's. It was Nathaniel's. Maybe every triad needed someone who wasn't afraid to grab the power and run the metaphysical bus. Jean-Claude drove the bus for his own triumvirate with Richard Zeman and me, because Jean-Claude was the only one of us who wasn't conflicted 6 ways to Sunday. What do you think would have happened to Jean-Claude's triumvirate with Richard and me if it had been up to the Ulfric and me to control things? Damien frowned, but said,
It wouldn't have worked. Not even as well as it works now.
Why, or why not?
Richard hates being a werewolf, hates being attracted to Jean-Claude, hates that he loves rough sex and bondage.
And I used to be as conflicted as Richard about most of the same things, I said. Damien nodded.
If you had been less conflicted about you and me.
He shook his head and ended with,
That's not fair. Or maybe it's just useless. You didn't want me enough and you did want Nathaniel enough.
I found a way to fit into Anita's life, and Micah was willing to open his life up enough to love us as a threesome.
Damien blinked those big green eyes of his and said,
Threesome. We were a threesome. We didn't just take turns having sex with Anita, did we?
No,
Nathaniel said softly. Damien stared at us, a look of soft horror on his face.
You rolled us. You said, I want this, and your eyes glowed.
You said the same thing, Damien. I remember hearing you say it, which is almost the last clear memory I have, I said.
I asked both of you every step of the way, and you said yes. I didn't know that I could roll both your minds. I didn't know I could roll anyone's mind. I'm not supposed to have those kinds of powers as a were-leopard.
Damien put his hands over his face and mumbled something. What? I asked. He spoke up but kept his eyes covered as if he couldn't bear to look at us.
I asked you to go down on me, because Cardinal couldn't because of the fangs. I don't like pain, and the fangs make it hard to do without it hurting.
Yes,
Nathaniel said.
I asked for it, but I didn't ask Anita to do it. I just said go down on me. I remember both of you taking turns.
He lowered his hands and he still looked horrified, but he said,
It had been so long for me, and it felt so good.
I swear to you, Damien, that if you had told me to stop, I would have, Nathaniel said.
I didn't tell you no. I remember that now. I remember the first time I rolled someone's mind that completely. I didn't know exactly what I had done. I thought the woman wanted me. I didn't understand until the second night when I tried to see her again and she didn't remember me at all.
You're not mad? Nathaniel asked.
No. I remember what it's like when the mind powers first happen. It's heady stuff. I'm the vampire. I should have been the one helping you learn. But I was too worried about you being a man, and... Oh, gods, I remember when I bit your back.
He put his hand over his mouth. I couldn't read the look in his eyes, but it wasn't anything good. We could have all dropped our shielding and felt everything between the three of us emotionally, but we were all too afraid to do it. No,